Welcome to the December edition of Shoe Geeks, brought to you by the Inside Running Podcast. This week's episode is brought to you by Brooks, the Seattle-based running specialist with over 100 years of experience in the footwear game. At Brooks, their purpose is to inspire everyone to run and be active, because every day with a run is better. They use this philosophy plus a combination of runner insights and biomechanics to develop products that will enable you to run further, faster and happier. Pay attention a bit later in the episode as the boys review the Hyperium Tempo. It's Brooks' fastest trainer ever and was developed with some of Brooks' fastest pro athletes to help runners achieve more in every workout. The Hyperium Tempo is a shoe-in to become your new favorite training buddy. These shoes retail for $299.95, but Brooks are giving away one pair to a lucky listener. Be sure to head over to our Facebook page for the details, and this competition is available to Australian residents only. Enjoy the episode.
Good morning, boys, and welcome to the December edition of the Inside Running Podcast, Shoe Geeks. I'm joined by podiatrist in Sydney, Thomas DeCanter, and 2:14 marathon runner. How you been going, Tommy?
Good day, Nita. Good. Good, thanks.
Very good.
How are you going?
Very good, thanks, mate. And also over in Ballarat, owner of the running company Ballarat, and coach at Run Strong Online, Julian Spence. How you going, mate?
I'm good, thank you. Run Strong Online, thanks for the plug.
Yeah, well, you know, you have so many things to say about you, mate, that I forget that the coaching business is probably the one that's got the biggest future in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's got the biggest work from home capacity, which I enjoy.
Yeah, it's very true. So, well, I might actually begin with Tommy. Tommy's, you know, probably one of the best followers on Strava at the moment. He's in good shape. He's got Launceston coming up this weekend, the half marathon. And he's also run PBs in the 5 and the 3K since we've spoke to him, I think. Maybe just the 3K since we spoke to you last. But what shoes have you been wearing this month, mate?
Yeah, thanks for that. So pretty much more of the same. I've been using a bit more of the those new ASICs that we got, Nimbus Light 2 and the Evo Ride mm-hmm. 2. One that I didn't mention last time, which I've done now a few runs in, is the Hoka Rocket X.
Yeah.
So I got another bit of carbon to the rotation.
Tell us about the Carbon X.
Good. A lot better than that. No, so this is the Rocket X. So yeah,
oh,
I prefer
Rocket
a lot
X.
better to the Carbon X.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Rocket X. So I had the Carbon X, but the Rocket X feels like a better performance shoe.
Is it lower stack shoe than the Carbon X?
I'm not sure. I think it's relatively similar stack, but it's certainly got like a smaller footprint. It's not as it's definitely not as flared out. And it feels like it's a much softer foam. Feels lighter. I think it is. It's lighter, softer. And the plate, interestingly, they made the plate a little bit thinner. So it actually flexes a little bit more. It's not as stiff as the Carbon X is or was. Mm-hmm. So to me, I actually quite like that. I like a little bit of a feeling of flex, and it probably needs that anyway because it doesn't really quite have the rocker of some of the other models. So I think without that little bit of extra flex in the plate, it would have been a bit, a bit of a tricky ride.
Would it be using it for shorter reps or longer tempos or?
So long runs.
Long runs.
That's not in the customer profile when they put that shoe out.
No. So this
is the shoe that you are running down to the beach in the day after you run a 3K PB, 30Ks, 4-minute K pace. You're running a pair of Hoka Rocket X.
It is. Yeah.
There you go.
So over hills and when you're running. See, because the thing is with my long runs, it's kind of like my third session for the week. So I'm not going hard, but I'm not like an easy jog. So yep. I do like to wear a shoe that helps me to, keep a bit of an honest pace going on those runs.
Now they're a low pitch as well, aren't they?
Yeah. So I think 4 mil.
Do you put heel raise in them for your long run?
10 mil.
10 mil. So you're up 14.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Why do you hate lower heels so much in shoes?
Just like history of like annual Achilles issues. So, like I've had it enough times that it's like, why bother with the increased risk? Because I don't seem to have any negative effects of the heel lifts. Like to me, it actually, my perceived comfort is increased with the lift. So as soon as the lift's in the shoe, it just feels better to me. I just feel like it's a more enjoyable ride. And so that in association with the fact that my recurrent Achilles issues, I don't even muck around with trying to wear low drop anymore because it's just it's not worth it.
Do you feel like the heel cup where your heel sits in the shoe, your foot's always in like the wrong spot because you're not really sitting where the shoe wants you to sit?
That's the biggest issue, I'd say. Most models are fine. Like the Rocket X, the Rocket X is quite deep, so I could put 10 mil in there, and the lockdown is totally fine. Mm. Whereas, for example, the New Balance 1080, I felt like it needed a lift, and I think I only had I might have had like 6 mil, and I just couldn't get any heel lockdown. It pushed my foot because it's got that, especially because it's got that molded sort of heel cup. It just didn't fit right after that, so I just couldn't use that shoe with any lift, and then it just wasn't as enjoyable.
Actually, and before the Knights model was actually quite a shallow heel cup as well, wasn't it, on the 1080? And so you put a heel raise in that, you were slipping a little bit as well.
So I'm unique in that respect, but for me, that's just what I find works, and it works well in the Rocket X among other models. Just got to see what works. If I'll just play around with the different heights.
Do you build your own heel raise, like your own, like pick your own durometer of EVA?
Yeah. So I started buying like sheets of EVA and cutting them out and different densities of sheets. And so like in the Dragonflies, I've found a density that's probably somewhat similar to the, just feels it's like the durometer, the softness is somewhat similar, so it feels like it's part of the shoe as opposed to something that's too stiff and that's too noticeable.
Tom, like probably a good question, a lot of listeners going, you do your easy run in it like a super shoe. What would be the consequence?
We call it super shoe, Stu? We still call it the super shoes or just racing flats now?
I guess racing flats, there aren't a lot of traditional racing flats left.
That's true.
Let's call it a racing shoe. So what would be the consequence of wearing a racing shoe like this every day?
It's not particularly stable, considering that it's soft foam, and it feels like it does give a lot.
I'll jump in and go, what's the consequence of wearing a shoe that's not stable every day?
Depends how stable you are.
I guess it's just it's to do with the stack. It's to do with what you're used to. So I find that it's basically the higher the stack, the more movement that may be there from that side to side, that frontal plane aspect. And particularly if you're used to wearing shoes that don't have that stack and don't have that softness, the foot's not used to that side to side. So it's probably more of that change from from what you're used to wearing a lot of to wearing more shoes that are more unstable. So there's probably some people that could just get used to wearing shoes that are less stable, and that may be okay. But I'd say it's probably inherent. I think there is inherent risk with always working those tendons and muscles that that job is to stabilize. So tib post, peroneals, predominantly those two, the stirrup sort of muscles on medial lateral side of the leg, that probably would cop a fair bit of load, as well as the plantar fascia.
That's what I was asking about. That was because that's what I don't think people understand so much. This shoe's really soft, great. First feel in the store is beautiful. It's cushy. I'm going to wear this for everything.
Yeah.
But it's just that the cumulative extra little bit of load placed on those stabilizers that leads to trouble over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How are those ASICs faring, those three ASICs you got given last month?
Yeah, really good. EvoRide is a lot more enjoyable for me than the original. So EvoRide 2, it feels a touch softer. Mm-hmm. It's more of a shoe that I probably could use on. I'm probably using this one inappropriately for you, Julian. I'm just using it on like easy runs and that sort of stuff, as opposed to potentially it'd be more of like a session shoe. Mm-hmm.
Julian had a good analogy for it the other day in group chat. What was the shoe? What do you use it for, Julian?
Easy days where maybe, I don't know, because I break my easy days into two sorts of easy rays. One of them is the recovery day where your legs are beat up from the day before, you're cruising, you're sluggish, and you're shuffling along. That's probably not the day for this shoe. And then some days you're feeling better, you're up on your midfoot a bit more, you're popping along, you've got a bit of a license to get after it. That's the day that I wear the EvoRide 2 as well.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, definitely.
I haven't been wearing the new Glide Ride that much, to be honest. But Nimbus Light 2, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good update. So yeah, on the stability thing, it's probably a little bit more stable than the original one. So you don't have, because it's not quite as soft, and there's a little bit more ground contact with the midsole. It's a bit more of a stable ride. So you could probably safely just get some more easy Ks in there without the, and that's probably a good point with how you'd use that, Julian, with I'd probably use the Nimbus 2 as a recovery shoe post session, just because it's still soft, but yet it's stable. And so it feels like, if particularly if you have just done a session, and for me, it's mostly foot and ankle that are probably a little bit loaded, and calf, then Nimbus Light 2.
Let's say it's stable compared to your other shoes, but I'm not going to call that shoe stable compared to those that it competes against in the industry.
It's heaps more stable than the original, though.
Than the original.
Oh, correct. Definitely. Yeah.
But then you put that shoe up against like something, like let's just say out of ASIC's range, like a Pursue or a Cumulus, even the traditional Nimbus, it's the least stable of those four mileage neutral shoes.
It depends how
you strike the ground, I suppose. Like if you're a big heel striker, maybe that's the case. But if you strike in the midfoot, the total contact area is pretty good on the Nimbus Lite. The foam's just more compliant. But if you're Tommy probably weighs 65 kilos at the moment, so he's probably striking the ground.
That's what I mean. Like it is very soft, and the softer you go, the less like you compromise some stability and like from a like in store, like seeing lots of different body types in different shoes, that Nimbus Lite is a pretty niche little shoe. Even though it's updated to fit a greater range of runners, I still think that it should be used sparingly.
It's as stable as the New Balance 880.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you have to be a person that is hitting the midfoot, forefoot, and being a bit lighter as well. But while we're on this point, like there was data released like last year. You don't want to get too nerdy here, but people that were lighter who wore firmer midsoles were actually at higher risk of injury as well. So you got to go the other way. Like Tommy's in really good shape. He's really light. You put him into a Pursue or something denser, maybe that extra stability makes him at risk of injury because the shoe's so firm for him right now as well. So you got to think of the other way around, not just being too soft and compliant. So
what were the examples of the firm shoes that they used?
I'll attach it to the show notes. I'll put the study up and have a read of it. But yeah,
the shoe's not firm. It's just
really.
It's pretty firm. It's pretty firm.
Oh, there's some firm. Mate,
you need to trim down. That's the issue.
I don't know. I'm not calling it. It's still soft. Like, there's been some firm shoes out there. Have you guys ever put on a Mizuno Shadow? That's a shoe.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand it's firm. It depends on the part of the shoe. Like, I mean, I haven't worn a shoe like a Pursuit for a long time. I put it on, I walk in it, it feels really soft. I run in it, it feels really firm. So, yeah, it depends on what part of the shoe you strike. So,
DS Trainer. That's cool. A firm shoe.
That's firm.
That is. And I've been talking to, I've been training a couple of staff recently, and like the amount of times that I've said stable, that covers about 8 different concepts in footwear, and it's very confusing for people. I'm sure the listeners are hearing stable.
Yeah.
And because stable refers, it's like a broad term that covers, like, I guess, a concept, and then we use it as a very specific word for a lot of different things with shoes. So it's this could be a difficult discussion to sort of follow along, I reckon.
You probably could make the argument in the past 3 to 4 years that word stable has become more diverse because people are trying to do different things to, you know, to redefine stability as well. Like, historically it was just a posting on the inside part of the shoe, but now we're talking total contact area, guide rails, you know, density of foam, etc. So there's many other ways to be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what are you going to race in this weekend, Tommy, in Launceston?
I got a fresh pair of Next Percent. So I know Julian was trying to, quite a few people have been like, why haven't you got the Alpha Fly? Yeah. But I'm going to stick with the Next Percent.
I was considering breaking some rules and getting you a pair, mate, but rules are rules. If I mess that one up, then I mess up my count. And you're too high profile. You're going to be on the news. You're going to be over the internet. Sure. And so they're going to see these orange shoes and go, oh, where'd you get them?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you're pretty good at the Next Percent. That was your 64-minute half marathon in Melbourne. So, Gary, I can see you're in pretty good shape to run well at this one. If I had to give you any other shoe besides the Next Percent, what shoe right now in the market would you wear happily and think you wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't change your performance? What other super shoe or what other performance shoe would you wear?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, I've only got the experience to draw from me is probably the two that stick out. They're the closest that I've used to the Endorphin Pro from Saucony and the Hoka Rocket X.
Mm-hmm.
Because what else have I got? Like, the Meta Racer to me is more of a traditional. It just feels not enough, not giving me enough back. So I wouldn't really put that up there as a shoe that I would choose. I don't know, to be honest. Out of those two, to be honest, I actually really like the Rocket X. If it was a marathon, I probably would consider Rocket X. But because it's a half and I'll be running at a faster pace than I would for a mara, I'd probably go the Endorphin Pro. But I think I've chatted about this before with you guys and to other people when we want to chat about shoes, about the way the foam responds. Like, I find... The Rocket X is crazy good at absorbing. So it's like such a soft, compliant foam. And it feels like, for example, I could smash a downhill in that shoe and it would feel probably as good as the Next Percent and much, much better than the Endorphin Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But on flat, at pace, it probably just doesn't have so it absorbs well, but it just doesn't have the same pop. It doesn't sort of give back. So it absorbs, but it's that giving back that it probably lacks. Whereas like the Endorphin Pro is like, that's its thing. It's so poppy, especially sort of when you're up on the forefoot, it tends to give back a lot, but it's almost the worst out of the three. It absorbing. So I did do like a hilly tempo in the lead up, I think, to State Cross, and when I was going fast downhill in that shoe, I realized that it just doesn't the foam, it's almost like the timing. It's like the, it's almost like it wants to, it's not, it wants to give back, and I still want it to absorb more of that load. So it's like, it just wants to spring back. It's like a timing thing, I think. So yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, the way the foams behave, I think I would sort of pick different, whether the course is hilly or not, I think it would affect my choice, and obviously the distance and pace. To your point, I'd probably go the Endorphin Pro if it wasn't for this race, for this half, because it's flat and hopefully be in PB shape.
What would you wear right now, Julian, if you're running a half marathon fast? Would you wear your Alpha, or would you wear your Next Percent?
I'd wear my Alpha.
Okay.
Yeah. I like it.
Any reason for it over the Next
Percent? I feel it fits my foot better. That's probably the main reason. The Next Percent's a bit too tight for me, and I've had issues with my foot going numb. And so I think the Alpha is a better toe box, more accommodating.
Yeah, that's good.
And Julian, what have you been wearing this month? Now you're back into, 120, 130 Ks a week?
Yeah, I've been really mixing my shoes up a lot. So it's rare that I'll wear the same shoe twice in a row. I've tried to sort of keep it on Strava, like up to date what I'm wearing.
On that, before you go any further, I have a question here from Paul Glass, a listener question. He said, listener question for the main show, all shoe geeks, mainly for Moose. Following on Strava and also listening to the podcast, I've noticed a few times you've frothed over a shoe in the beginning, and then after a while you seem to go off it. For example, the Peg Turbo or the New Balance 1080 V10 comes to mind. Do you think it's because you know what's coming out next, or the shoe starts to lose its magic, or you have plenty of other options and you're just excited by something new? Do you get the chance to critique it and find the flaws, or is it just literally you have too many shoes, Julie, and that's why you can just change them all the time?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think it's probably a combination of everything there. So I do get excited by new shoes that come out, and so I will. When I bring that new shoe out, then I'm excited by the features that I think will work, and that's what I kind of focus on. And then after maybe 50, 100K, I start to pick up the features that aren't working so well for me, and I'm always in the search of a perfect shoe. So if I realize this isn't the perfect shoe, then I'll be less inclined to wear it as often. So there's a few shoes over the years that you'll find me putting 700 Ks into and not really updating. And those shoes like that are the Vomero 13 from Nike.
Oh, close to perfect.
Yeah, close to perfect. That's right. So, and then there's the Saucony Triumph 3 was another one that I just ticked through with a lot of different models. So when I find a shoe like that, then I will wear it. But I'm on the eternal search for the perfect shoe. That's why I try a lot of different ones. For instance, what was mentioned was the Peg Turbo. When I got a little niggle, like my plantar issue, the Peg Turbo disappears for me because it's too flexible, it's too unstable. I need something with a little more integrity to it. So that's an injury-related change. The 1080 is more of a shape change. I felt like my foot was a little too cramped in the shoe, so that's why I moved on from that shoe. And that's my as you run more, your feet get more sensitive. So if I'm in a... if I'm running 150K a week, then my toes, the pressure that accumulates in a shoe on my toes makes my toes a lot more sensitive. And when I put a shoe on, I need to sort of relieve that. If I'm running 50K a week, the accumulated pressure is so low that I can wear shoes that are a lot tighter and with a less perfect fit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like when I put a shoe on, like I immediately judge it by its feel of the midsole, like how it reacts. And that will, like, I'll get excited by how that feels. But after running for 4, 5, 6 runs, all those small details, like the upper and how it reacts on the hard surface versus the soft surface and how my niggles are, will determine whether I enjoy that shoe down the track. But initially I get excited just by the first run because, oh, they've nailed this midsole. But those details become a bit less important once you start collecting a bit more volume, I reckon. You start sort of, like you said, you've got a wider foot, so you're looking for a bit more width, or your plantar sore, you're trying to look for more stiffness. And, yeah, it does change, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned I like that you're you're prioritizing fit as a big thing that you're looking for, a good fit. Because I think that's crucial. And I think the more you run and the more shoes you've tried over time, the more you realize how a shoe should fit and like how a good fit is. Because I've certainly like run in shoes over the years where I've just sort of probably prioritized midsole, the feel of that, but it just sort of, so I think in an ideal situation, you're just looking for that upper that just feels like it's part of your foot and holding on it well.
It's so true.
Yeah. And where you run, again, if I'm running in the bush, say in Ballarat or Anglesey, and I'm going down hills, then I need a shoe to fit a lot better than I do if I'm just jogging around the lake in Lake Wendouree, where the foot is not put, there's no sort of stress placed on it. It's staying where it should. It's not sliding forward. It's not sliding lateral. So the shape and the materials they use in the upper to hold the foot down change from like where I run, I'll change that type of shoe. Not so much going to a trail shoe, but say let's use the 1080 as an example. That upper is very flexible and sort of there's a lot of give to it because it's called a hyper knit. And when I run in the bush with that, my foot goes everywhere. Yeah. If I run around the lake in that, it's perfect, beautiful. But I need something a little bit more secure if I'm going on a long run through the fire tracks around here.
Yeah, I did a park run, a local North Sydney park run once, which people that know that one is like a ton of turns. There's some hairpin turns and stuff. And my favorite shoe at the time, which same as you knitted, you did love the Epic Nike Epic React.
Oh, yeah.
And that was ridiculous. So like, yeah, that upper, that knit upper, it's like half my foot came off the midsole on some of those turns.
Was that the first model that was a slightly more compliant upper as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it may have been. Yeah. So like totally fine, like flat roads and just going for normal runs on relatively not hilly terrain. But as soon as you got real hilly or had these sort of sharp turns at any pace, you just wouldn't wear it, and that was just totally just down to the upper.
Yep. Yeah. We're even training staff in the store, the rule is no one leaves in a shoe that doesn't fit properly, no matter like what's underneath it or how good it looks or whatever, unless the customer is sort of saying nah, this is fine. We'll concentrate. We talk about fit before we talk about any other factor of the shoe. So fit is the number one priority, and it's the number one thing that makes shoes unsuccessful for the wearer.
That's a good point. Like there was, study released looking at what made a shoe comfortable, for example, and they actually didn't have fit in there. Like it was always assumed that fit was performed well by the retailer, but you'd almost argue fit is the one that needs to be focused on more than anything else, more than all the other attributes of the shoe. So
that's crazy. That's unbelievable, because I'd say 8 out of 10 people who come in our store are wearing shoes that are probably either too narrow or a half a size too small. There's very rarely someone coming in with a shoe that's too big or wide for them. But yeah, and just the immediate like relief they feel when their foot can actually splay inside rather than sort of feel like they're always cramped. It's just such a relief to their foot.
I feel like for girls in particular, if they're used to wearing like at work or casually ballet flats or heels with a point, they're somewhat conditioned to wearing a shoe with toe boxes that just keep the toes sort of snug, and I find that they almost feel like for some that's kind of how a shoe should feel, even a running shoe. Whereas it's just like I have to always sort of explain that no, the running shoe should feel secure and snug in the midfoot and the heel. But once you get from the forefoot up, it should just be a feeling of like almost like you've got too much room. As long as you're secure through midfoot and rear foot, you just want to feel like you got heaps of wriggle room. And that's like people are like, oh, okay. It's like because they've just, like you're saying, Julian, when I and that's something I've done more in recent years, which I kind of was just focusing on the biomechanics of the shoe and the interaction. But more recently, I've just been reassessing fit when people come in with their shoes, like put the shoe on, stand up, and just like, just firstly, just make sure the fit's right before I even look at anything else. And it's amazing. It's probably early years, you know, through podiatry, I probably missed a lot of people that were actually, I may not have assessed the fit well enough initially for them. They probably just kept wearing a shoe that was probably too small or too narrow.
Yeah.
Look at that wisdom. Look at that wisdom, Tommy.
Yeah. I mean, we can go deeper. We can talk about how a fit can change over time. When you start to, it's not so much an upper stretching as it is the shoe compressing underneath the foot, which creates troughs in the foam and the inner sole. So a lot of people come in and go, and they're coming in with blisters after, but they never had them early on in the shoe's life. And they're saying, oh, these shoes have just started giving me blisters. I'm not sure what's wrong. And you look at the inner sole and there's absolute like caves through it and big divots out of it. And then you can sort of consider the foam is not compressing evenly. It's compressing where the load's placed into the foam. So all of a sudden their foot starts sitting on little angles and they start wearing out the shoe in different spots that creates like more room in some areas of the toe box than the other. So that's a sign your shoe's done as well. You probably should update.
Have you guys felt your forefoot indentation in the Nova Blast after like 200K plus?
I haven't. Big.
Oh yeah. Put your hand in there, feel the forefoot indentation, particularly after a run. It's like a cave, it's like a cavity.
Mate, I felt that 50Ks into the first Nimbus Light model, I reckon. Nimbus Light 2 is firmer, but the first model of the Nimbus Light, I could definitely feel like a concave area on the lateral aspect of the midsole.
Yeah. It's soft.
Yeah.
So what shoes have you been wearing,
Julian? Oh, well, Evo Ride as well. I've been enjoying that firmness underfoot. That's another little trend. Like if you always wear soft shoes, it's nice to put a firm one on every now and then. Feel like I'm a little bit more dynamic in it. Still in some Ultras, the Olympus, both models, just ticking through those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it, really. I think we've covered the other ASIC shoes off, and that's what I'm jogging in.
Yeah, good. And nice. Any fast-running shoes now that you're back into session, sticking with the Alpha, or are you mixing it up still?
Mainly just the Alpha. So. Yeah, I'm doing all my speed work in that, and I'm doing my longer reps, and I'm doing my thresholds as well.
What are all the other performance shoes doing? Are they just sitting in the cupboard?
Pretty much.
When are you getting the Adios Pro?
I don't think we can get that from. Where do you buy that?
I don't know.
That's so hard to get.
I don't know.
So hard to get. That's right. So
that's what I was alluding to, Tommy, before, and I was asking what other shoe would you potentially wear for the half marathon.
Yeah, never tried it on, right? So you don't know.
Very true. But if you know, it's hard not to go past all the anecdotal results, isn't it? And think this shoe obviously does allow you to run similar to the other shoes that are out. So, but it may be completely different.
Maybe I've put my foot into another Adidas racing shoe down the line. That's very similar, and it's pretty good.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, to be honest, I reckon I've worn the same shoes you guys have this last month, but I've actually gone back to, I had a bit of a testing shoe from one company, which I really enjoyed. It's gone now. So I've actually gone back to wearing my Pegasus 37. I haven't worn that for ages, and I've enjoyed that again. I've actually enjoyed that a lot more just on flat city loops, hard surface. I do find like I need to put a heel race in that shoe because my Achilles flares a bit, but the heel cup's just not quite deep enough in that Pegasus. So it's sort of become a shoe more like 30 to 45 minutes. And my longer running shoe has been the Nimbus Light. I've enjoyed the Nimbus Light 2, sorry, not the first one, the second one. The first one I couldn't quite tolerate. And but the only real new shoe I put into the rotation this week was what we got from Brooks. I had the Hyperion Tempo. So the Hyperion Tempo, if you've seen it, it's got like the black upper and it's got like this, like a neon type blue midsole. And they use their midsole, I think it's the DNA Flash. So it's sort of like one of their sort of, you know, their foams, it's compliant when you strike the ground, but it's probably pretty responsive as well. But I've tried it for everything. I've used it for some 1K reps, for a small threshold run, and a slightly longer run out to an hour as well. So it's, I think the stack height's about 26 and 18. So it's 1 millimeter above what you can wear on the track. So it's actually quite traditional in terms of its stack height, and its pitch is 8 mils. It's super light. I think off memory, my size 10s, I think might be 220 grams, maybe 200, might be less, might be 215 grams off memory. So, and to be honest, I've actually enjoyed it. Like, I probably have preferred it more on the softer surface. If I run on dirt or run on grass, because it's a lower profile shoe, I haven't worn a racing flat for 3 to 4 years, I reckon. That hasn't been, maybe I've worn the Nike Zoom Streak probably once or twice in the past 2 to 3 years, and probably feels more like that than any other shoe, but maybe a little bit lighter perhaps, and maybe a little bit softer as well. But I know, Tommy, you got given the Hyperion Tempo as well. How have you found it?
I do. I have it. I actually quite like it. I'm probably not using it. Again, I'm probably using it for a purpose that it wasn't designed. So I think I mentioned this on maybe last month when I mentioned using it. I've been using it basically as on Wednesdays, Saturdays, session days for me, and I've been using it warm up and cool down. And I've also, interestingly, like, again, what you were mentioning, Julian, with a shoe, an easy day shoe you might use on different easy days. I'm using it kind of on a Friday or Monday. So those days aren't directly after a session. Mm-hmm. So a little bit like I'm using it interchangeably with the Evo Ride 2. It's kind of just one of those shoes. It's light and fun and relatively, like, it's not soft. It does take the sting out of the road. It's got, to me, it's just got enough cushion for a short, easy run on road. I probably wouldn't be loving, like, yeah, long stuff on the road with it. But it the benefit of it is just that it's different to other stuff that I've got. Like, it's flexible in the forefoot. Like, I can just feel all those forefoot joints bend. It feels like really natural. Like, and in terms of the fit, that upper, like, it just wraps around my midfoot. Nice room in the toe box. Good heel lockdown. So I like my runs, my run commutes are like hilly road, and so when I get a shoe that's sort of light and fits really well and has just enough cushion like this, it's fun to run those hilly road loops with.
Good.
The upper is fantastic. It does lock down really well. But I've got two runs here, and I made a note of this. It's just probably last week. We had a day that was 18 degrees, and I ran in the Hyperion Tempo, and the DNA Flash felt a little bit firmer. I went for a run one day. I missed it in the morning. I was lazy, didn't get up, and then went for a run at lunchtime. It was 34 degrees. And, mate, the midsole is very different at 34 degrees than it is at 18 degrees. It was super soft. I was like, oh, this is, it almost felt Nimbus. I mean, it didn't feel that plush, but it was just a different foam altogether. So it was chalk and cheese. Could have been wearing a different shoe completely if I was blinded to it, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree with that. I reckon I felt that. And I think I've heard that before with this type of foam. I think it's similar.
Yeah, okay.
To me, it sounds like, I think this foam is most similar to what Skechers use, their Hyperburst foam.
Yeah, okay.
And I think these foams are affected more by weather. So if you want a softer shoe, I guess summer with this model might be better.
Yeah, don't leave it in the car, I don't reckon, just in case.
Yeah.
On a hot day.
Well, yeah, that's... I've actually taken on the Brooks Adrenaline GTS 21, which we did have a chat about last week on the show, mainly around the guide rails first, medial support or versus posting. I mean, this is one of the biggest selling shoes in the industry. It's softer than it was before. That's probably the biggest takeaway for me, is that the shoe feels smoother underfoot than in the past. It feels more even, more balanced. this new version of the 21 has DNA Loft, which is like a softer, smoother foam from the heel all the way to the forefoot. So like that's what Brooks are doing in some of their other models as well. The Ghost will get that soon. The guide rails we chatted about last week, which isn't a direct sort of medial post anymore, but sort of performing, it is in this in store, like when we're sort of using it with customers, it's still performing pretty well. I mean, it's no Adrenaline 13, which was, you probably remember the 13 because it was very strong. It was like the go-to for a lot of the industry. I think it was the most sold shoe in the US that when it was out. So it fits more people like that. The fit, it's a good fit. It's probably a bit narrower than the last version. That's been the takeaway in store. I didn't wear the Adrenaline 20, so I can't really compare, but I can put this shoe on and it fits me straight away and it's smooth. And that's the sign of a shoe that will be successful commercially, is a shoe that fits a lot of feet, that doesn't have, say, like crazy heel cups at the back or seams or wraps through the midfoot or crazy little decals or weird toe caps up front. It's a shoe that you put on and go, yep, that's very inoffensive. And then when I'm walking, I'm like, I don't feel anything. I don't feel pressures, lumps, bumps, anything like that. So it's smooth in that regard. I like this shoe at 12 millimeter heel offset is a bit too much for me. I enjoy wearing shoes like the Evo Ride, which is less. So for me, this is a really comfortable shoe that I'm walking the dog in. But a lot of people with more of a rear foot strike will enjoy the transition from heel strike through to toe off. So I think that's what this shoe, that's the kind of runner who will enjoy this shoe a little more. Someone maybe a little bigger that won't get away with those really soft, spongy foams. Someone that needs a shoe on their foot. Someone that needs foam that's got more integrity to it. That's the shoe. This is the shoe.
But it's interesting. So they use their guide rail system, which I guess the analogy that they use is sort of like the bumper rails at the bowling ball. So there's like a room to move like both your heel inverting and everting, for example, and they create like a coupling of like the base of the midsole and change the density of the foam. Not the density of the foam, just the, I think, the geometry of the foam a little bit, and to try and keep the calcaneus being able to move, but just like within certain limits. Do you feel that much when you're in it, or do you not notice it?
I don't feel the rails as much as some other shoes that use guide rails. That's a good thing for me.
Yep.
To not feel the rail pressing into my foot, because I know like Infinity Run React, that those rails are a little too pronounced for my comfort level. So to be less intrusive might mean that they're making less of an impact. I can certainly would prefer to wear a shoe like this where I don't feel it as much. No, I don't feel like those specific things you've mentioned.
I mean, I've worn Brooks shoes historically as well. I think I date back over a decade ago. I had a shoe called the Brooks Trance. You remember the Trance?
Yeah, that was a big boy.
That was a big boy. Yeah, that was like a 400-gram shoe, and I would have weighed 60 kilos at the time.
That was popular.
It was heavy. It was.
Yeah, it was popular, yeah.
It sort of, yeah, it disappeared a bit, I reckon, though. They sort of brought out a shoe after that was just above it, I believe, in terms of stability.
Like Transcend, it got replaced with Transcend, and like I'll be real, that shoe is a bit of a dog's breakfast. The Trance at least did what it wanted to.
But the Adrenaline was always like a version below it, probably more affordable, a bit lighter weight, still heavily posted in the medial column, whereas now, like what we've discussed even last time, we discussed the dual density postings, that people are gravitating just a little bit further away from that now to try and allow the foot to, you know, move a bit more natural, for example. But I guess the point of stability is, you know, I put a person into the Brooks Ghost. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Brooks Ghost is universally one of the easiest shoes to sell. And I think if you put it on 100 people's feet, 95 people walk out saying, yeah, this is pretty good. There's nothing really wrong with this shoe. And the Ghost is a really stable, neutral shoe as well. So how that stabilizes is merely by, you know, the density of the foam, the surface area on the outsole, how the upper fits. do you, have you tried a ghost on comparatively to an adrenaline? Do you find them like much, much different?
Yeah, like the biggest difference is the rail technology. So, mm-hmm. and there's a few other little factors like some of the outsole sort of linking up, the medial side's a little stiffer through the outer sole, but the ghost is a little bit, well, the ghost is a much more popular shoe in the store, mainly because like it is a stable neutral shoe. It probably feels slightly smoother than the adrenaline. It's a lighter shoe. It's we stock it in multiple widths, in an all black. So, again, a commercial shoe is one that you put on that fits a lot of feet and it feels cushioned, but there's no red flags anywhere. And for a ghost, like that's a, if we can get someone in a slightly less expensive shoe, well, they're actually not. They're the same cost now.
Are they? Yep.
The ghost is $10 less expensive. Yep. Then that's a good thing. That's a win for everyone.
So would you say a bigger body goes into the adrenaline, or literally a foot that's probably got more, you know, is moving more?
Moving more still. We put a bit of, what we're doing here is putting a little bit of faith in the fact that these rails might hold up over time. So like where our limitation is that we see a foot for 10 seconds running on a treadmill. And that's when someone's fresh, their mechanics are as good as they'll be. If you take that person, put them at the end of a 90-minute long run, their gait changes, they're a lot more fatigued, they tend to be a slower cadence, a lot more sloppy in their gait, and that's where I think like a fatigued runner might do well with a little bit of that reinforcement from those rails.
Yep, that's cool.
And as it wears as well, I guess. So that stability factor in 300-400K.
Yeah,
so gets maintained.
Yep. Yeah. That's another little thing that we consider in store is how this shoe and how this runner will look firstly after 90 minutes or like 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 2 hours, and then what the shoe will look like after 200K, 600K, whatever.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, back on that Hyperion Tempo, like I obviously appreciate being given the free pair of shoes to trial out, and I will use this shoe a lot more for some of the repetition sessions. I've enjoyed going back to a more traditional feeling flat. I think after wearing, you know, the original 4%, the Endorphin Pro, the RC Elite, it is good to hit the ground with a slightly firmer shoe. It's extremely lightweight. It's definitely probably the lightest shoe that I probably am currently wearing besides one of the next percents if I'm racing in. But I probably the only thing worth noting is it probably does feel comparatively to like a Nike Zoom Streak for me as well. It is a bit higher on the cost. So I think you retail, the Hyperion Tempo is retailing at $300. So so if you love your Brooks shoes, you probably will, you know, gravitate towards this as a tempo or a faster running shoe. But it is on an upper echelon of cost. So yeah, I'm assuming that's just because of the technology and the materials they're using compared to their current line. So I guess they compare a shoe sale compared to what they've got on the market at the time. So, but that would retail at about $300. Is that right, Julian?
Yeah, I think so. I think 300. Yep.
It will be interesting to see durability wise, how the midsole stacks up, whether you'd hope that it's actually a pretty durable, like you'll maintain that poppiness for quite a period.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Very good.
Thanks to Brooks for sponsoring the episode. Now, why don't we do a listener question, boys? We'll do one, I reckon. Then our time's up.
Yeah, I've got a good one here. And it's it actually came through on Instagram. It's from a guy called Adam Ballard. And he said, "Hey, mate, I have a question regarding footwear, whether it's a listener question on Shoe Geeks or not, but it would be nice to ask someone with knowledge. That's always nice. I am wondering about shoes to wear while not running. I've got a good rotation of running shoes, but work in hospitality have 10 hours a day on my feet. I typically just wear Vans or something comfy." Something comfy is pretty arbitrary, isn't it? "And I was wondering what the best suggestion would be to look for in a work shoe."
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people focus on like shoes that they wear for 30 minutes a day when they run, and then they wear a shoe, like then they buy a $30 shoe to work 10-hour shift nursing or hospitality, like you said. and their foot and their body just gets ruined from these cheap shoes.
That creates our industry, Julian, me and Tommy.
Yeah, I know.
Jobs because of these decision making.
How many sketches? How many sketches shoes do you see a day?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Sketches for nurses. Oh, that's so
it's
comfy.
Funny though, but that highlights exactly the whole point of the comfort filter and how that can fail because they do, everyone that comes in said, yeah, I bought them because they're just so comfortable, and they're injured and they still say, yeah, but it's so comfortable. But then you look at them walk in and like the shoe's like half coming off their foot because they've crushed the foam is so soft, it's like crushed so unevenly that
plantar plate tears, the shoe's so compliant, but yet they still walk in thinking this is what is best for them perceptually. Yeah. It's a huge error in the comfort filter.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It is. This highlights that issue with that paradigm, I guess. But yeah, we see a lot, Julian.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys wear to work?
Well, I've been in the Hoka Bondi 7 leather. So
all white leather, is that right?
All white. You've got to look good. That's the difference.
That is amazing.
At work, there's an aesthetic component. So I pick the best looking shoe I can find. And we're all got different styles. You boys, I mean, Tom thinks he's super cool in Sydney and Adelaide. Well, there's not a single cool person in Adelaide. So they don't know what's cool. I'm interested in what you wear to work, Nitta.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wear shorts, polo shirt, and I wear a different pair of running shoes every day. In fact,
polo shirt. There you go.
Polo shirt.
Yeah, definitely a polo shirt, man.
It is Adelaide.
I wear a GT 2000 quite often. So I don't run in those shoes, but I wear that. Well, otherwise, I've got two pairs of Epic Reacts that don't quite fit me for running. So I'll wear them throughout the day. So, or I will wear. Any shoe that I have that is usually black and white. So the New Balance 1080, the Reebok Symmetros. I get to wear really comfy shoes in my job because people look at me and say, oh, he's a sports podiatrist. He can wear sporting shoes to work. So I'm not like Tommy. Tommy wears boots, I reckon, off memory.
No, I don't wear boots.
That is a Sydney thing.
No, I don't wear boots. Settle down. No. Right, I've been wearing runners for years now, actually. I used to wear like a leather shoe, but no.
What do you got now? What are you wearing?
I got a pair of Adidas, actually. Don't even know the model. They're just like one of those streetwear boost, like all boost midsole. Comfy, real comfy, and like a knit upper.
So if you worked in hospitality, what would you wear?
Good question.
Yeah, I'd say as close to a running shoe as you can, to be honest. Like I'd be looking at those models where you can get, you know, like an all black, whether it be mesh or leather, but a running shoe.
Yeah. A Brooks so whether, Dyad.
Yeah.
Brooks Dyad leather. That'd be a comfy work shoe, that's for sure.
Like I know a lot of nurses and I'll be recommending it if they do come in with an issue wearing the Hoka Bondi in all black.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you just, if you're going to be on your feet that long, particularly if you're running, you know, for you, whatever, it doesn't really matter what the mileage is, the absolute number, it's just all relative to how your body's responding to that load. And if you're increasing your load, like if you're ramping up load, I'd be like just protecting when you're not running as well. So there's that whole sort of, like, what do you do when you're not running? Do you want to go more minimal to strengthen? Because, I mean, there's rationale for when you're not running to actually be wearing, so you run in more cushion or supportive shoes, but then go more minimal when you're not running, because there is evidence to suggest that more minimal shoes will strengthen the intrinsic muscles of the foot, which, you know, should be a good thing.
That's the only thing. Like, if we strengthen intrinsic muscles of the foot, we don't know if we're more protected from injury, etc. As well, like it's a bit of a hypothetical. No. I mean, I always thought you're trying to offload as much. If you're on your feet for 10 hours a day in hospitality, I think you're always just trying to offload as much as you can so you can reload when you're running. So, I mean, even if you wear some of those nice, you know, the Saucony or New Balance, you know, the casual shoe range, they were basically, you know, a leather-based upper off the 1970s marathon running shoes you used to wear. They're still a nice thick strip of EVA beneath the foot. They look good. They usually have a pretty good upper fit through there as well. And I usually find that even wearing shoes like that, I can just about run in them. I remember missing or getting to training one day and having my old pair of Nikes, like a casual pair in the boot, didn't bring my running shoes, forgot. Ended up warming up, doing 5x1K and then cooling down the shoes and thought that wasn't too bad. Like the EVA was denser, but it wasn't that bad. You could wear that for 10 hours and not have too many complications, I reckon. Those casual shoes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. Well, I hope that answers Adam's question. That's given him like, you know, five, you know, casual shoes, running shoes from the 1970s and Brooks dyad leather.
Yeah. Brooks, the Hoka Bondi leathers, they're pretty cool. You can start to see some of those old, like you said, the re-releases of shoes. ASICS are doing like the old Kayanos and stuff coming back.
I've seen a couple of them.
It just depends on like the flexibility in your workplace as to what you can actually wear. If it's going to be black leather, then yeah, there's not a whole heap of option. We normally in store roll with the dyad or the Hoka Bondi, but there's also like the Saucony Echelon comes in a leather. There's a few. I'm sure there's ASICS walking shoes. We don't really play in that sort of area, but anyway, that's
there's options. Sense. You just got to look for them.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, that covers most of our shoes for the month. But I tell you what, I'm pretty excited for the month of January and February. I think there's going to be a large drop of some new Nike shoes, isn't there, coming up? So I'm sort of like hanging on. Like I haven't received heaps of shoes in the last couple of months where volume shoes and updates. But I think Julian, you'll be stocking a lot of them. There'll be the new Vomero 15 coming out sometime the next few months.
The men's have already hit the store, actually.
Have they really?
Yeah.
You put it on the foot?
Yeah, I've put it on the foot. It's not. Look, to be honest, it's a slight disappointment to what.
Mate, three types of foam.
Yeah, three types of foam. Maybe too much. Like too many different densities under your foot. That it's not as.
Well, you mentioned Vomero 13, and that was one of my all-time favorite volume shoes. The 14 was a tough shoe to wear, I found, and I was hanging for the 15. So
the 15 is different from the 14. It's an improvement, I think. It's still not quite as solid underfoot as I wanted, but I mean, when you put Zoom X, you take away anything that might be solid, and then there's a big Zoom bag under the forefoot, which is very noticeable. Yep. So it's probably a faster, more up tempo shoe than the 13 was, which was more of that safe, protective, long run shoe. And that's I was thinking maybe the 15 would go back to that. Look, it's still a good shoe, but to be honest, the Structure 23, the Nike Structure 23. Is closer to the Vomero 13 than the Vomero 15 is.
There you go. Yeah. And I haven't tried the 23 yet, and it looks good as well.
Looks like a big update.
It is a big update, greater surface area, more guts underfoot. It doesn't have a strong post in it, so it's open to a lot more foot shapes and types and mechanics. And, yeah, I think the structure is going to be a bit more of a player than we first thought.
Yeah, nice.
Are you going to be stocking the Invincible?
Yes, big time. I mean, I love the sound of it. I think it might be delayed. But again, I've never actually had that on my foot, so I can't make too much comment. But you would have seen probably on Instagram by now what the Invincible is. It's a training shoe with Zoom X in it, and it looks nice and broad and high stack. And yeah, there's going to be like a little bit of a question mark, like when you put so much soft foam into a training shoe, is there going to be enough integrity in the foam?
Tommy, you will be able to wear it. You're weighing not much at the moment. I'm assuming you'll work well with that foam, but I like the React foam. I think the React foam works well as a volume shoe, but obviously it didn't in the Vomero 14. There wasn't simply enough of it. So, so that's going to be the Infinity 2 coming out, the same shoe as the first one, just that upper that doesn't slip. So that might fit a bit more of the population, but it'd have to compete against the Invincible and the Vomero 15 and the Pegasus The Nike have such a good volume range at the moment. So,
yep. All right.
Very good.
Oh, well, Nita accidentally clicked leave, so I'll do the sign up. Thank you, Tom, for coming on the show again.
Thank you. That was good fun, as always. Yep. Thank you. Should be good.
Keep an eye on you. Get in the news. And Nita rejoined. So, Nita.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Thanks for leaving early. You just dropped us. And
it was a very abrupt.
Apologies.
And,
yeah. Sorry, guys. You guys enjoy your week and your weekends. And good luck, Tommy, this weekend. I'm assuming hopefully we see a PB on the cards. And you're my pick this weekend, actually. Everyone's picked Robbo or Sam McKenzie. And I'm picking you.
Why? Okay. It's going to be different.
You're due, mate. Your time is coming.
Yeah, right. That's you're picking some rough odds there, but okay.
I mean, speaking to Gary enough to become super optimistic about these things. So
we both know that Gary is a very optimistic person.
Well, he's been nailing some results recently, though. So we don't know, Tommy. You might surprise.
Should be good.
Yeah. All right, guys. All right, enjoy your weekend.
Cool.
See ya.
All right, bye. Thanks.
This week's episode is brought to you by Brooks, the Seattle-based running specialist with over 100 years of experience in the footwear game. At Brooks, their purpose is to inspire everyone to run and be active, because every day with a run is better. Don't forget, Brooks are giving away a pair of their Hyperion Tempos. To be in for a shot, head to our Facebook page for all the details.